Chapter 24. Message to Hapen Fleet Ops. Originating station, Terrafon. Unregistered and unidentified ship notified to us by Jedi Master Skywalker has been removed without authorization from Tuana City. Please advise Master Skywalker that we regret this act of theft while the vessel was in our jurisdiction, and will meet any claim for compensation. Mandal Motors Landing Strip, Caldabe, Mandalore. Boba Fett meshed his fingers to push his gloves back tight on his hands and looked up at the open cockpit of the Besulik. Under his visor, he allowed himself an intensely private, broad grin. Bevin applauded, laughing.
Mondo boys on tour! Come on, Bobica, take that jetpack off before you get in, or you'll have a nasty involuntary ejection at altitude.
Spirits were high. Fett hadn't led a Mandalorian strike force since the Vong'ese War, as far as he could recall. There might have been others, but that was the big one, the one that counted. There were cheers of,
Oya Manda!
As Besulik prototype fighters were rolled out from the hangar. People were taking holo recordings and pointing out the finer points of the airframe to their kids. The mood around Fett felt like a heady blend of nostalgia and optimism for the future, which was perhaps inappropriate considering that they were about to violate Mercana sovereign territory, only temporarily, of course, and bomb a couple of its factory complexes into hut space. It was all being done considerately. He'd made a point of sending a warning to factory staff and residents in the likely blast zone to evacuate well in advance. It wasn't as if the Mondo flight was sneaking in and hammering them without decent notice. Mondoade weren't savages after all. Well, not recently. And only to Vong'ese if they were. Besides, Fett wanted decent HNE coverage of the new fighter in action. It was worth an armored division in terms of deterrent. There was nothing sloppier than finishing an engagement before the media had a chance to set up and record it.
Dad would have loved this.
Fett was due to be the last pilot to embark, so he watched the other pilots getting into their cockpits. Bevin had been looking forward to this like a kid before a birthday. Medrit lifted up their grandchildren, Shalk and Brila, so the kids could slap their handprints on the fuselage in paint. It was a discreet light gray, although Shalk insisted a good verdish blood red shade would have been heaps and heaps better.
Babuir, called Myrta. Hey, hang on! Pare Sol!
Fett turned. Myrta was running across the field, data pad clutched in her hand, and Orade ran with her. Either she thought Babuir was so senile that he wasn't capable of returning alive from a simple bombing raid in the hardest fighter on the market, or she wanted to do something unforgivably sentimental. He braced for mild embarrassment. But she didn't look like she was about to have a sentimental moment. She looked distraught. Fett automatically did a quick scan around the crowd to make sure everyone else whose survival mattered to him was still there and in one piece. Myrta was clearly bearing bad news that couldn't wait.
Oh, well. It happens.
Babuir, she panted. I want you to be really calm about this.
Fett said nothing and just pointed to his visor.
I'm not sure how to tell you this.
She brandished the data pad as if she wanted to show she had evidence, and that she wasn't kidding.
It's... I don't know.
Spit it out.
You know I started going through the Feta stuff.
Yeah.
I did a search of all the archive material for names like Resada and Resoda.
Fett could see he was going to have to drag it out of her a grunt at a time.
Yeah.
Resodar. Gangster. Dead gangster, in fact. died around 38 years ago. That's the name stored in the Heart of Fire.
Fett noted Orade looking at Myrta as if he was more worried about her than about Fett's wrath for once.
That's going to be a significant date, I assume.
It is. I found he had an outstanding estate, which is what Feta calls leaving stuff of value without a will or anyone to claim it. The state can't claim it, so they store it. The state lawyer's really annoyed about still having to store stuff, and he says if we want to file a claim, he'll be a happier man. It'll take some time.
Fett wasn't sure that the news of a very dead scumbag's leavings was worth interrupting his Besulik moment. But Myrta wasn't the drama queen kind. This had to be something about Sintas's death that would make him very, very focused. She'd worked out that he'd been touchy and then some about slights to Sintas, even if he had left her.
Myrta,
Fett said firmly. He rarely used her name.
Just tell me the seriously bad bit.
She handed him the datapad. The screen was already set to show images of what was stored in Rezodar's lockup, all numbered by the Inheritance Court Division. Fett thumbed through them.
Just look for the carbonite slab, Babuir.
Fett didn't like the sound of that. When he got to it, he couldn't quite make out the contours, so he magnified the image.
Oh, Firfek.
He wanted to blurt out something, but no sound came anyway, and nobody was any the wiser with a man in a helmet. His legs threatened to give way. He handed the datapad back to her, taking a deep, slow breath to try to control the tremor in his guts.
What do you need from me to get this released?
Fett was sure his voice was shaking.
Credits. Signature.
Is that it?
Myrta demanded.
Just tell me. It can't be true. It can't be.
I can do it myself.
She looked hurt, which wasn't easy for a hard-faced girl like that.
1,000 credits.
I'll pay.
Fett could hardly believe the words that were coming out of his mouth, all in the voice of a calm stranger.
She was... She's my ex-wife, after all.
Sintas was alive. Sintas Vell, his first and only wife, was alive, provided nothing had gone wrong with the carbonite process. She was going to have quite a bit of catching up to do with the galaxy and her shattered family.
Aelin, what can I say?
Okay.
Myrta was all sour grit again.
Play the hard man in front of your bourgeoisie. But I know you by now.
Fett had decided to visit the refresher before the sortie. Now was a very good time.
I bet you do.
He strode off, same as ever, because that was what everyone expected, then shut the refresher doors and leaned his back against the wall. He slid all the way down it and squatted there, head in his hands, shaking. Sintas was alive. He waited a few minutes, then got to his feet and walked out onto the landing strip to join his Besulik, as if nothing had happened. Captain's Day Cabin, SSD Anakin Solo.
I see it now. I know what I loved most, and what had to be killed.
Jason had laid on his bunk for hours, trying to slot the last piece into the puzzle that tormented him. It was the prophecy. It didn't fit.
He will immortalize his love.
It was only when Jason considered that he might not refer to himself that he started down a complex path that showed the prophecy in its multifaceted complexity. It didn't just have one meaning. It had many.
And this is why I'm now Lord of the Sith.
There'd been no pyrotechnics, and no cataclysmic shift in the Force. And yet, from where he stood now, Jason looked back and saw a landscape that had changed utterly. It had changed footstep by footstep, act by act, death by death. A change so gradual and incremental that he hardly noticed its passage until...
until now.
He wasn't the same Jason Solo who was shocked when Lumia had told him he was destined to be a Sith Lord. If he looked back far enough, Jason saw its beginnings in Vergere's oddly concerned avian eyes as he suffered physical torment that had changed him forever, showing him that there was nothing he couldn't endure and pass beyond if his will wanted it. And he'd killed not a person he loved, but something precious whose absence he was going to find very hard to handle. It was already searing a hole in him. It had mattered, and it still had the appearance of being alive, but it was walking dead. What he'd loved and yet killed was Ben's admiration and devotion to him. Jason had grown to love that adulation, and he had loved robbing Luke of the role of adored father and mentor.
He will immortalize his love, where immortalize means dead.
And Ben... he knew Ben well enough to realize that he would never rest until his beloved mother's killer was caught, and that she would always be that perfect icon of beauty and courage to him.
Ben's love's immortal now. It'll last as long as he lives, unchanging, like his vision of Mara. And... like the hatred and vengeance he'll feel for me when he learns what I did. That'll live forever, too.
Jason got up and looked at his reflection in the mirror on the bulkhead again. He'd studied it as if looking for changing symptoms, hour by hour, to see if his Sith status were manifesting itself in his flesh. He didn't look any different. But he kept seeing Ben's face as he walked up to the boy in that tunnel and found him keeping vigil over his dead mother. His eyes. They knew something was waiting to be revealed. Something that would rip him apart.
Mara made Ben start wondering why she didn't become one with the Force. Sooner or later, he'll find out. You played your part in my destiny, Mara.
And when Ben finally found out that it was Jason who'd killed her, he'd hate him more than he could even begin to imagine. Jason had injected a slow poison into Ben's love for him, as surely as he'd poisoned his mother, and seeded a terrible and wonderful hatred. A Sith needed that magnificent well of loathing to achieve greatness. Ben would eventually become greater than his Jedi father could ever be. In the meantime, Jason's war continued, now on the wider political stage as well as in the GAG. He picked up the black GAG helmet that he rarely wore, rotated it between his fingers, and felt an odd queasiness in his gut as he put it on. It was standard GAG trooper issue, flared jaw section with a dispersal gas-proof filter, the visor a single shallow V-band of toughened Duraplast. Just a basic tool of the job. It wasn't much different from the functional helmet troops had worn for decades.
But I don't need this, do I?
He stood in front of the polished Durasteel bulkhead. The black outline in front of him was smeared and hazy, a mere impressionist suggestion of what he was. He could hardly look. He was everything his enemies said he was. He was embarrassed. Yes, the embarrassment overshadowed any guilt. He had killed, and killed again, and killed Mara Jade Skywalker, who was both family and friend. Friends. Now he had none left except Tenel Ka and Alana. And they would come to hate him when the truth was known.
I've sunk as low as I can in the eyes of ordinary people. But now, the only direction is up.
Jason thought of a brief conversation with one of the GAG troops, a former police officer from the Coruscant Security Force. Most murders, the officer had said, were committed by family and close friends. The random killing of strangers was relatively rare, even in the seediest quarters of the violent, lawless lower levels.
I'm not so unusual, then.
Jason took a breath and stepped two strides sideways. He was now looking into the mirror set into the bulkhead of his day cabin again. Crystal clear, sharp, merciless. He gazed at an image of all-encompassing black. He knew what people said behind his back, that he was trying to emulate Vader.
So, I'm proud of my grandfather, but not blind to the weaknesses that brought him down.
But that was wounded pride speaking.
I have to be beyond that now.
He had to be beyond fear of small consciences, and even beyond the hatred that would make Ben Skywalker a strong, worthy, and terrifying successor to the title of Dark Lord. But that would be years in the future. Now was the time for a man who'd once been Jason Solo to shoulder that responsibility for the galaxy's sake. Jason took off the helmet, looked into his own eyes, and didn't flinch.
Kydus,
he said.
My name is Darth Kydus.